Hi, everyone, and thank you again for listening to another episode of Queer Mountaineers. I'm so excited to share this week's episode with all of you, but before we begin, I have a quick announcement. I'll be at Morgantown Pride. Yes, I will have a table at the first ever Morgantown Pride block party. I'll be giving out stickers, buttons, and Rainbow Pride tattoos. I cannot wait to meet all of you face to face and to be such a part of an amazing day. The block party will be April 13th and will be located on Arch Street, and I really hope to see all of you there. Now, back to the episode. This week, I sat down with Krizia Berg. They are the graduate assistant at WVU's LGBTQ Center and one of the leaders of the Speakers Bureau, which is a panel of students who visit classes to talk about LGBTQ plus identities and inclusivity. We had a great discussion on the importance of LGBTQ inclusive education, as well as differences between the queer communities in Morgantown versus other areas of the country. Now, with that being said, let's hear from Krizia.
My name is Krizia Berg. I'm a first-year MFA and acting student here at WVU. I'm also a grad assistant at the LGBTQ Center, and I'm part of the Speakers Bureau.
Cool. So at the LGBTQ Center, like, what do you do there as a grad assistant?
So I'm kind of in general support of the center. So the LGBTQ Plus Center has a lot of different missions, including outreach and education, of course, providing resources to our students of our community. As a grad assistant, I kind of fill in the gaps that faculty and staff aren't as easily able to fill, or I do lower priority work. Not that Safe Zone is a lower priority work. Safe Zone is one of the big missions of the LGBTQ Plus Center, but that's something I'm a part of, which is kind of like Speakers Bureau, but generally geared towards faculty and staff, creating allies within the people who work for the university. And we just try and find lots of stuff to do for the center. So I help coordinate events. I'm developing a class that's kind of in limbo right now. Things like this, reaching out, starting conversations with different groups.
That's awesome. So speaking of the Speakers Bureau, do you mind telling me a little bit about like what you do with that and like what it's all about?
Absolutely. So the Speakers Bureau is part of the outreach and education mission of the center. But it's also a student organization, so it's run by students versus Safe Zone, which is generally all faculty coordinated. What we do is we visit classrooms on request of a teacher, and we speak generally a little bit, go through some main talking points about the LGBTQ plus experience, and then we open it up for questions. And we use our personal experiences to kind of bridge the gap between the more academic side of Safe Zone, which is very statistical, backing everything up with facts, and then using our personal experiences to go, hey, we're not just a bunch of numbers. We're real people, and we're right here in your classroom. One of the reasons the Speakers Bureau was so important is because there are people that come from all over West Virginia and surrounding states. And it's not that they haven't met any queer people or LGBTQ plus identified people, but they may have come from an area that is more conservative or less friendly to people who are nonconforming to sexual orientation or gender identity. So by being here in a classroom and sharing our experiences, we can help them clear up any misconceptions that they may have about LGBTQ plus people. Mm-hmm. One thing that we've noticed, and the Speakers Bureau has been going on for 11 years, and it's something that's always benefited our community on campus. And over the years, one thing we've noticed is that a lot of ignorance is just that, it's ignorance. It's not necessarily hatred, but a lot of hateful behavior comes from just a lack of understanding. And again, that lack of understanding isn't driven by some innate disgust with people of the LGBTQ plus community. It's more, if no one has come and explained who we are, then how would you understand?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. What kind of classes does the Speakers Bureau usually end up going to?
So we can go to any class, and generally a teacher will try and find a way to work it into their curriculum. So it's a lot of social science-oriented classes. Mm-hmm. So I've personally been to social work classes and women's and gender studies classes, and I think sometimes we can get into communications classes.
Yeah, I mean, that's really important to get into those communications classes. I was in a women and gender studies class last year, and the Speakers Bureau came last year for that. And that was a really cool experience. I mean,
I'm a lesbian myself, but, like, of course, I don't understand every single aspect right. of the LGBTQ community. And, yes, I have friends who are different identities, but it's good to, like, hear from other people who, you know, are other identities. And it was really cool to be able to listen to different people and understand it a little better. What was I going to say? So, sorry, I lost my train of thought. The communications classes, I mean, they're helping to get information out. They got to be inclusive, right?
Right.
I mean, I'm a journalism student, so that's partially why I did this podcast, is to, like, not only help others understand, but to help me to understand. So that way,
yeah.
when I get out into the real world kind of thing, like, I'll be able to hopefully be as respectful and, you know, inclusive as possible when I'm doing my reporting.
Of course.
So, yes.
Well, then every major should include some sort of unit on LGBTQ plus issues.
Exactly.
Because... Well, for example, I didn't come to know myself until I started studying LGBTQ plus issues, and then I've developed a more nuanced understanding of my gender and my place in a gendered world. But part of why I didn't come to the conclusion earlier that I am who I am is because I just wasn't presented with the information. So that's one thing. Another thing Speakers Bureau does is it kind of fills in that gap where LGBTQ plus issues are generally excluded from almost all curriculum unless it is some sort of social science-oriented class.
Or gender studies class.
Right. And that's just – well, of course we're going to talk yeah. about it there, but why wouldn't we also talk about it in journalism?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we also talk about it in engineering or STEM or et cetera?
Mm-hmm. Because we exist everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
We exist everywhere. So if we can help people understand and be, you know, better people for it, then – That's important, right?
Exactly.
Yes. So where do you see, like, the Bureau or the Center going in the next, like, few years or so?
So the Center itself has only been around for a few years, even though the Speakers Bureau has been around for a lot longer. LGBTQ plus community on this campus up until the Center was entirely student orgs and student-driven with, of course, faculty advisors with those student orgs. And then... Of course, getting a lot of help from the Women's and Gender Studies Department. So we recently moved into Maple House, and we have our own space now, which is a huge improvement for us. But it also kind of takes us away from – we were used to be in Hodges right next to the PRT station, which was super convenient and very visible. So one thing we're going to try and do now is work a lot harder to increase visibility, because before we kind of had a passive visibility where people would just walk through the hallway all the time and they'd always see the center there. Now what we need to do is start having more and more events, bringing people together to the house and bringing the center to other places. Another part of the center's mission has always been outreach outside of the university, working within the community and community specific to West Virginia, and also to address issues within the LGBTQ plus community that are making headlines. For example, there was the Michael Critchfield case not too long ago, and the LGBTQ plus center and our director were instrumental in the county's Board of Education's response to the issue as it happened. Mm-hmm. So we're always continuing to do that. That's always going to be priority number one. Speakers Bureau obviously doesn't handle issues of that kind of weight, mm-hmm. But what we are trying to do is make our process a little bit more streamlined. To get as much information out as possible and to try and reach as many classrooms as possible. Ideally, we wouldn't even need the Speakers Bureau because, like I said, there's a gap in LGBTQ plus issues in curricula. And if Speakers Bureau is kind of filling in that gap, but that responsibility really shouldn't be on the community and students who are busy trying to take classes.
Mm-hmm. It should just be kind of natural part of it.
Right. You should just be able to talk about it for one class out of your whole 16 weeks
exactly.
per semester.
So New Jersey just recently passed a law saying that it's, you know, you need to have LGBTQ education as a part of, you know, like the curriculum. I'm from New Jersey originally, mm-hmm. so that was really exciting to hear about. So what do you think is about education and, like, how do you respond to, like, for example, like, parents saying, like, well, I don't want my kids learning about this stuff. It'll make them, like, queer or, you know, that kind of thing. How do you, like, respond to people who think that way?
That's tough. Mm-hmm. It's something that you really always have to handle on a case-by-case basis.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, like I said at the beginning, that sort of bigotry doesn't always come from a place of, like, hatred. It comes from, I just don't understand, or it comes from a place of fear. I've even met people within the LGBTQ community who are disappointed or shocked in some way when their kid comes out to them. And part of that is also fear, just I don't want them to have to grow up the way I did. Mm-hmm. And so even from cishet parents, when they see their kid possibly gender nonconforming and they might fear trans identity, they might fear a different sexual orientation, those parents aren't always just fearful of some sort of morality or some sort of wrath of the divine. Mm-hmm. It can also just be, I understand the way the world works right now, and I don't want my kid to have to suffer from the way the world works right now. Mm-hmm. So by introducing this sort of education into the earliest levels of our children's public school experience, we can actually cut that off from the very source. If children understood these things, they would grow up into adults who understand. And then we wouldn't have adults making hateful legislative decisions in the House and in the Senate.
So Eric Porterfield was, obviously he's doesn't represent every single person in the state of West Virginia.
No, certainly not.
But, like, you know, definitely there's people out there who are homophobic and transphobic but aren't quite as, like, you know, like, what's the word for it? Like, comparing the community to a notorious hate group?
Right, not so hyperbolic.
There you go, that's the right word. Yeah, and I mean, like, that made national news, those comments.
Yeah,
like,
well, of course.
I mean, yeah, like, that's crazy. And then, of course, I don't know if, I mean, I noticed in a lot of, like, the LGBTQ, like, news and, like, other, like, magazines and articles wrote about, you know, Michael, was his last name again?
Critchfield.
And, you know, that what happened there. And especially when the Board of Education decided to, like, cut the assistant principal's contract who harassed mm-hmm. him, like, that went up on the, you know, the internet. And, like, you know, people were excited about that. Well, some people. Don't read the comments on those things sometimes because...
It's never worth it.
Oh, it's never worth it. Like, the ones with the LGBTQ, like, centric, like, magazines and stuff, people were okay with it. But, like, I made the mistake of looking at, like, comments for, like, the general news about that. And I was like, oh, God, I'm not looking at this anymore. Like, it's just horrible sometimes. But, you know, it's why education's important.
Exactly.
So, just gotta keep working on that. So, maybe you talk a little about you, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Awesome. You said that what are you studying again? I totally forgot.
I'm studying my MFA in acting.
Cool. So when you were an undergrad, did you study that as well? Or?
Yeah. I got my BA in theater arts and performance from California State University, Long Beach.
Cool. Oh, California.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's like that's a bit of a difference between
It's
here.
A complete climate shift.
Just a bit.
Social and atmospheric.
Yeah. Like, what are some of those differences that you've noticed since you came here?
So I really wish I had just come out sooner in California or come to terms with myself sooner in California so I could have experienced more of it. Mm-hmm. But just everything about being queer in California is safer. In Southern California. California is quite a diverse state. But when I came out as transgender, I came out in a performance to my classmates, and I was met with tears and hugs and I love yous and just the joy that I was going to be who I am instead of hiding behind a wall. I was met with acceptance from the university. My teachers immediately approved, and they immediately tried to integrate my new pronouns. They apologized and made sure that if they made a mistake, they wanted me to always understand that they're trying their best to see me as I say I am. I never felt doubted. No one questioned me. They were just like, oh, well, I'm glad that you understand yourself now. That's good for you. And it didn't even need to be that big of a deal. I grew up in Washington State in a semi-conservative area, and I remember when someone would come out, it was a big deal. Like, the whole school would talk about it. And I'm sure some people talked about it when I came out, but I didn't have people, like, coming up to me to say anything, or no one treated me differently all of a sudden. I was just – I just went by different pronouns, and I was – all of a sudden it's like, well – Don't call Creasy a man or sir or whatever. And the university adopted. The university had a very good pronoun and name recognition procedure. I went in and changed my pronouns on my, like, school profile. I had the option to change my first name, my preferred name. I hadn't adopted a new name at the time, but I was able to shorten it to a less masculine form and more neutral form, and that was reflected on all my paperwork immediately. I even had the option of changing my gender on my paperwork. So instead of it saying male, because that's what I was assigned and that's how I was processed when I changed, I was able to set it to non-binary, and that was just a built-in option. Here was very different. I came out to my faculty on my drive out here, which it was a very difficult decision to even come here in the first place, because I was so afraid of West Virginia. From my California like lifestyle, I had an idea of what it meant to live in West Virginia, and I was very afraid of the conservatism out here. And I knew that this would be like kind of a bubble in Morgantown. It's a university town, so I knew I wouldn't be in like total danger. But there was still a lot of apprehension that was kind of justified when I made a phone call and said, hey, these are my pronouns. I actually go by this name, and I look still looking forward to coming out there. I was told that I was deceitful. I was told that, well, they and them are – that refers to a group of people, so I don't know if I'm going to change those pronouns for you. And, well, I picked you because I saw you as a man, and we need you to play men, so you might just have to be a man while you're here. The faculty who made those statements have since apologized, and we have a better understanding now, but that just would not have happened at my undergrad university in California. Part of why I felt comfortable coming out is because I had a teacher who was transgender. I was surrounded by discussions of gender orientation and sexual identity and the liberation of all of those. Mm-hmm. Whereas out here, you have to look for your community spaces to make sure you can talk about those things with freedom. That isn't to say I feel unsafe. And I know statistically most LGBTQ plus people feel safe in most areas on this campus. Like, it's not that bad. But I do know that I have to be careful depending on where I'm driving around, or I have to know which grocery store I can go to, or which grocery store or whatever business I can present myself in which ways. There's a lot more code switching out here, and I have to just pay more attention to where I'm walking around and how I'm going to present myself in those areas.
So why did you come here in the first place? Coming from California to West Virginia, obviously a big shift in like culture and social aspects of it. So like, why did you come here?
Well, it's to get into grad school for acting is a little different than other programs, where for other types of fields of study, you might just apply to a bunch of different programs based off of what you need for your future. For acting, you will do that same thing. You'll apply to specific programs, but you also, in general, most people do this, you audition in front of a panel of schools that's called URTA, University Resident Theater Association. So I auditioned in front of a total of about 40 different schools in one weekend, and West Virginia University is the school that ended up giving me the acceptance phone call. They actually responded a little late. I had already made peace with not going to grad school. I had a lot of really good results with the first round of callbacks for a lot of really good programs, and then I just got passed over by all of them. So I thought, well, I'm already right next to Los Angeles. I'll just start my career now. I was going to go to grad school first, but I'll just start my career now. And then I got a call from West Virginia University saying, hey, we still have a spot for you if you haven't taken an offer yet. And I actually had to say, I can't answer that right now because West Virginia is not where I thought I'd be spending the next 3 years of my life, and I need to think about what that means for me. But my partner and I talked about it, and we just thought about our long-term goals, how going to a really big culture shift could make us not just stronger as a married couple, but stronger as individuals moving through this country. And we both felt like we needed some perspective to break us out of our California bubble mindset.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, you know, I'm from New Jersey. I mean, I'm from, like, South, like, Jersey area, so near Philadelphia. To be honest, because I wasn't really out too much and didn't really understand myself until I was about to leave, mm-hmm. I didn't really know too much about, like, what being, you know, part of the LGBTQ community there versus here, like, the biggest differences. But, I mean, now I'm starting to understand because New Jersey just passed a law where public schools need to include LGBTQ education and things like that. So I didn't quite experience as big of a culture shift thing because I was trying to understand myself and didn't really look too much about what was going on, like, outside, like, my own personal experiences. So that's interesting to, like, hear about, like, because, you know, people always tend to associate, like, the LGBTQ community with, like, you know, California and, like, you know, New York City and things like that and other, you know, big city areas.
Yeah.
So with people who, I'm trying to figure out how to word this question. The point is I'm asking about, like, a lot of people leave West Virginia. A lot of young people leave West Virginia. Some people stay, of course, but especially for the queer community here, it's hard to leave to go to those other areas, like California or New York City or something like that. Like, how do you respond to people who, how would you respond if someone said, like, oh, then just, like, go somewhere else if you're not comfortable, you know, if you're not safe here being queer and all that stuff?
Right. Well, two main points. First, I would say that there's an interesting intersection, overlap, and divide with being queer and being West Virginian, from what I've noticed, because there is a specific image and idea of what it means to be West Virginian, and that 99% of the time means conservatism. And being queer often just doesn't overlap with that. But the fact is there are queer West Virginians, and that also means there are queer conservative West Virginians. So it's not impossible for every queer West Virginian to live here. I was just talking to someone yesterday who said I had to make peace that I have a transgender West Virginian friend who is also a Trump supporter who owns an armory in their garage. And you wouldn't expect all of those identities to mix together, but sure enough, they do out here in West Virginia. So I think there are places where you can be queer in West Virginia and find some comfort and some community. So it's not like you have to get out of West Virginia if you're queer environment. And in fact, I think it's going to change. West Virginia has the highest rate of transgender youth in the country, which is super interesting. And I want to know exactly where that comes from. But as long as that continues, people are going to stay in this state. Now, that also, there are almost no transgender endocrinologists in the state for transgender people. There's a very, very small amount.
There's, like, one Planned Parenthood spot, and, like, they provide, like, you know, hormones and stuff for people who need it. But, like, I can't honestly think off the top of my head off, like, besides, like, somewhere in Pittsburgh, but not everyone can get
that. A lot of people will go to Pittsburgh for hormone therapy. I feel like I strayed too far on the transgender part of that. I guess the second point I wanted to bring up was that it's a really privileged thing to say, well, if you don't feel safe here, you should just leave. And that's also just kind of a defeatist attitude, I think. If you don't like something about your area, then but you do like your area, why wouldn't you try to change the climate of your area? And also, not everyone just has the means to leave the state. West Virginia has a very low minimum wage. Job opportunities aren't great. So how are you going to build up the means to go somewhere else if you're struggling to pay rent? Or if you didn't have the financial means or financial support from your family in the first place or something like that.
Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for the next episode, and make sure you mark your calendars for the Pride Block Party Saturday, April 13th from 2 to 6 p.m. on Arch Street. I'll be there, as well as a bunch of other great groups and vendors, and it's going to be such a great time. I cannot wait. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week. Bye!